We continue the Shir in Gemara. Last week we began speaking about the Mishnah in Sanhedrin, which said, "Kol Yisrael Yesh Lahem Chelek Et Olam Haba," which means that every single Jew, every individual Jew, has set aside for him a definite place in Olam Haba, in the hereafter, the world to come. We explain then the different meanings of Olam Haba, meaning, of course, Gan Eden, for example. After a person passes away, the soul goes to Gan Eden. That too is considered Olam Haba. Also, in reference to the hereafter, what follows after Gan Eden. And then we come to the point where the Gemara says, the Gemara adds, it is true that every Jew has his part in Olam Haba set aside for him, but there are certain Jews who are an exception to this rule. One of those, the one we deal with now, the more in detail, is a person who does not believe in Tchiyas HaMesim. Tchiyas HaMesim means we're at a certain period, certain time, after the coming of Mashiach, the dead will come back to life physically. The soul, of course, never dies. The person passes away. We note that if you compare a living person to a dead person, you can detect no difference whatsoever. Physiologically, there is nothing missing in the dead person's body that he had before. Physically, everything is there. He had 248 organs of the body before, 365 tendons, all are present. His bloodstream is intact, the heart, the brain, the eyes, the other physical characteristics are all there. There is only one thing missing, and that is the spirit. Spiritual soul that is gone, that is the life in the body. So that, since that spirit is gone, it means that the life is gone, and that life, of course, continues to live. That is the soul that lives on. The one thing that died is the body. However, the Torah tells us that if a soul is going to its rightful place to receive reward for its deeds, its mitzvos on earth, why should the body be deprived of that very same reward? The soul could not have performed these mitzvahs without the body. Yet the body is placed into the grave where it disintegrates and it is practically gone. What about the reward for the body? This is what we call Tchiyas HaMesim, meaning that after Mashiach's coming, we have that special event called Tchiyas HaMesim, which means that physically, the bodies of the dead come back to life. They are brought back to life in the same form as previously. Tchiyas HaMesim means that special time, a certain number of years after Mashiach comes, when the dead bodies in the grave will rise up, come back to life, and live a life that will be as blissful, as enjoyable as the soul enjoys in Gan Eden. Now we come to the point in the Mishnah. Though the Talmud says that every Jew, every single Yisrael, has a chelik, a part in the hereafter, this means that when he is born, when a child is born, when a Jewish infant is born, there is no difference between any two children. They are all born alike. They're all given the same opportunity in life to advance, to perform the mitzvahs, and to receive their just reward. But during a person's lifetime, though he has that chelik waiting for him, he can, chas v'sholem, lose his portion in Gan Eden, or in the hereafter. Hereafter, of course, as we said, means both. Gan Eden for the soul, and later on, subsequently, Tchiyas HaMesim, when the body and soul are rejoined, to both receive their reward together. A person can lose that for a number of reasons. Right now we discuss the first reason. First one, the Gemara says, is a person who does not believe in Tchiyas HaMetim. He does not believe that it is possible that a body which went into the ground, decayed, rotted, disintegrated, and practically disappeared, can once again rise up out of the ground in its original form. A person does not believe that. The Gemara says he does not merit, he does not deserve that he should be one of those who rises up then. He does not get Gan Eden or Tchiyas HaMetim. He does not get any part in Olam Haba, regardless of how many mitzvahs he performed, regardless of how good he was. He could have obeyed the entire Torah, but he is missing what is known as the key to Olam Haba. Now the Gemara adds this very special point. If a person states that he believes in Tchiyas HaMetim, he believes implicitly that the dead will come to life eventually, but he does not believe that this statement is written in the Torah Shebiktav. He does not believe it's written in the Chumash. He believes it comes from the Gemara and the rabbis of the Gemara, but it has no basis, no origin in the Chumash, which means that his faith is unwavering. He has implicit faith in the fact that there will be a Tchiyas HaMetim. But this statement is not found in the Chumash. It is based on his emunah, his faith in the Chachamim, the sages of the Talmud. A person like that, the Gemara says, is just as guilty as one who does not believe at all, and that person cannot receive any Olam Haba either. Now we come to the point, the Gemara says, if that's the case, then we are in trouble. Let's learn quickly. Let's find out, where does the Torah say, where is it written in the Chumash, that the dead will come back to life? Nowhere can you find that in clearly stipulated words. The Chumash does not say that the Mesim, the dead, will come to life in the future. So it must be hidden in some statement. We must know that statement to not to fall into the wrong category. The Gemara asks the question, where do we find in the Torah that there is Tchiyas HaMetim? The Gemara answers, Hashem said to the Jews, I am giving you a mitzvah of Trumah. Trumah means that you must give a certain portion of your crops that grow to the Kohen. What portion is that? Trumah, the Zohar HaKadosh says, is Trei Mimea. Trei Mimea, that's two out of each 100, or 1/50th of your crops, must go to the Kohen as Truma. The Pasuk says, exactly, Unesatem mimeno es Trumas Hashem li'Aron HaKohen. He shall give from this Truma to Aron HaKohen when you get to Eretz Yisrael. Now this took place before the story of the striking of the rock, before the story of the Meraglim, spies. At this point, Aaron HaKohen and Moshe Rabbeinu were both still destined to enter into Eretz Yisrael together with the Jews. There was no act for which they would have to lose this privilege. But since this is a statement by Hashem, who can foresee the future, and the fact that he foresees the future does not alter a person's right to perform mitzvahs or sins. This is known as the very delicate topic called Yediyah and Bechidah. Bechidah means that every single Jew is born with the privilege, with the power, to choose between good and bad. No matter how difficult it is to conceive of a person, an ordinary mortal, going against the wishes, the will, the command of Hashem, the Creator, still it is fact that Hashem gave this power and privilege to a person. It's up to you. You can choose whether to obey Hashem's command or to disobey. Of course, you are notified. There is reward for obedience. and penalty, punishment for disobedience. But the bechira you have. Question then arises, since Hashem knows the future, definitely knows the future clearly, knows exactly what's going to happen, he knows that within the next span of life, of a lifetime, this certain individual is going to commit a certain very major crime, a major sin. And since Hashem knows it's going to happen, what choice does that person now have? Can that person change his fate? Can he change that knowledge of Hashem? He cannot. It must happen then. So how does the person have choice? The answer, of course, is that the knowledge of Hashem in no way affects the person's choice. What the person will choose, Hashem knows in advance. This question, again, Yediyah and Bechira, which seems to be a contradiction within itself, seems to be one but is not, is a question that is discussed throughout most of the Sfarim of the Torah, including the Zohar Kodesh, which attempts to give an answer for it. And the final summary is that this is one item that no person can fully understand. Yediyah and Bechira, we just have to have faith that Hashem did give us that privilege, right, to select between good and bad. Now, Hashem knew that Aaron HaKohen was not going to enter into Eretz Yisrael. He was going to pass away in the desert. And yet Hashem made a statement and said, you shall give this truma not to a Kohen, but to Aaron HaKohen. How is that possible, that the Jews will give truma to Aaron HaKohen if he will not get to Eretz Yisrael? Hence, therefore, what Hashem was saying, in effect, was to notify us that there will come a time when Aaron HaKohen will be in Eretz Yisrael, and the Jews will give their truma to Aaron HaKohen. When can that be? When he comes back to life. When his body comes back to life after the coming of Mashiach. And there we see clearly a pasuk in the Torah which teaches us that there will be Tchiyas HaMeisim. This is the statement of one of the rabbis of the Gemara. Another rabbi disagrees with this statement. He says, we know Tchiyas HaMeisim from a different statement, one that is much clearer. This statement does not really prove Tchiyas HaMeisim, because what this statement means is that when you come to Eretz Yisrael, you should give your truma to a Kohen who is like Aaron HaKohen, which means a Kohen who is a Talmud Chacham and not a Kohen Amhoretz. You are not permitted to give truma to a Kohen who is an illiterate, to a Kohen who is suspect of not being fully religious. Of course, if he does not know the laws, he might be tamei, he might be impure, in an impure state to touch truma, which is holy. He can't commit a very serious sin, and therefore you must be certain, you must be careful, cautious to whom you give your truma. Be sure you give it to a Kohen Talmud Chacham in a category similar to Aaron HaKohen. Just as he was learned, so should the Kohen you give it to be learned also. In that case then, since that pasuk is not conclusive proof of Tchiyas HaMeisim, for where do we learn, where do we see Tchiyas HaMeisim as proof in the Torah? Therefore the Gemara says, second opinion is, there is another pasuk which says, Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu, pasuk now quoted, V'gamei kimeisi es b'risi itam, Hashem says, I established a treaty, covenant, pact with the Avos, with Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. During their lifetime, I established a treaty with them, v'seis lahem es eretz Canaan, to give to them the land of Canaan, the land of Israel. Not to give to you, to the Jews now, but to give to them. Hashem will give this land to the Avos HaKadosh. When will he give it to them? The answer is, obviously, there will come a time when all the righteous will rise up, come back to life, and at that time they will receive, they will inherit this land. Of course, that pasuk, again, might be tact as questionable as far as proof is concerned, because the word is lasseis lahem, to give to them. We could interpret that to mean Hashem established a treaty with the Avos to give to them, meaning to the Jews, to the descendants, the Bnei Yisrael, at the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. But we find, though, that in later statements there are other psukim to substantiate this. Leman yamechem al ha'adama shenishba Hashem laviseichem laseis lahem. There you find clearly stated, Hashem swore to your forefathers, laseis lahem, the land shall be given to them, to the forefathers. You say that in Kriya Shema every day, four times a day, or it should be said three times a day, rather. The first time we say only the first Pasha. We say Kriya Shema each day, daily, and we repeat that statement, the second Pasha, which states clearly too, that Hashem will give the land to the Avos. This proves then that the fact there will be Tchiyas HaMeisim is stated not only in the Gemara, but its origin is in the Chumash. How will Tchiyas HaMeisim take place? Very briefly, because we're going to go into this very deep detail according to the Zohar Kodesh Arizal in a later session. But very simply, the Gemara says that there are two things that sustain the body. Note, we said every Jew has his part in Olam Haba. Every Jew has Gan Eden, and every Jew will rise, will come back to life, except these certain ones who transgress on these special rules. They will never come back to life. What is the difference between these two physically? The Gemara says that when a person is buried, there is still life in the body. There is still what is known as a kista d'chiyusa. That means the lowest form of the soul, slightest degree of life in the soul, a slight portion of the soul remains with the body in the grave. And this, we know that even physically, for a period of time, for example, the hair grows, nails grow. That, of course, is not as important as the fact that the Gemara says, at the time of a funeral, for example, be careful of what you say about the deceased, the dead person, because as well as he can hear during his lifetime, his hearing is much more acute after his passing. He may be in an enclosed coffin, within an enclosed car, solidly built vehicle, yet he can hear through all that very distinctly. Plus the fact, the Gemara says, that though there is no mobility, the body cannot move at all, yet the body feels everything. If you jab a pin into a dead person, you'll hear no sound, no move, but there definitely is as much feeling as during his lifetime. This is the Gemara in Shabbos. Again, I repeat, we're not learning mysticism. This is clearly stated in the Torah, the Gemara. So that we see that there is a portion of the soul, a very tiny portion of the nefesh, that's the lowest part of the soul, not the neshama or the ruach, or even the nefesh, but the kista d'chiyusa, slight degree of the nefesh remains, which gives the body the ability to feel, to sense, to hear, and so on. Now, yet this portion too leaves. After the body is in the grave, after a certain period, that too leaves the body, and the body decays and disappears. But it does not disappear entirely. There is a certain, a very slight, tiny bone in the body, part of the spine, which is indestructible. This bone is called the luz, or the besur ramo, as the Zohar Kodesh calls it, tiny bone that's at the tip of the spine, the upper tip of the spine. This is the bone just above which the kesher of the tefillin shoresh is placed, according to the Zohar Kodesh. There are some days that say it's the lower tip of the spine, but most of the Sifrei Kabbalah say it's the top, where the kesher shoresh is, and that tiny bone is ever so tiny, is completely indestructible. The Gemara says if that bone was taken and attempted to crush with a steamroller, with a stronger sledgehammer, a sledgehammer would eventually break or wear out, this bone would not. This bone remains permanently until the time of Tchiyas HaMeisim, and then it becomes like dough. Just as dough can be drawn out and molded, so too from this tiny bone is molded again the form of the person. We'll see in a moment what happens at that time. As we said, I just touched upon this very, very lightly. Later on in the Gemara, we're going to go through this much more in detail. Right now, we still have the question of proof, more proof, as to the fact that Tchiyas HaMeisim is mentioned in the Torah. By the way, of course, the Gemara says that those people who do not deserve, do not merit rising at Tchiyas HaMeisim, those people, that bone, that luz, is destroyed too. Does not have the everlasting tendency, the power to remain. The Gemara now says that the Romans once asked Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya. Yeshua ben Chananya was known as the Hakim de Yehudoi. Of all the rabbis of the Gemara, he was the cleverest, the wisest, the sharpest mind as far as answering the questions of the skeptics or the atheists, the Roman philosophers, the Greek philosophers in those days. There was a number of debates and controversies in faith between Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya and the wise, the learned Greek philosophers at that time. Here the Gemara says, the Romans asked Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya, since you are the leader of the Jews, tell us, you make two claims. Prove these two claims. You say that Hashem will bring the dead back to life, and you also say that Hashem can foretell the future. How can you prove these two claims from the Torah? Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya replied, I can prove them both from one single sentence. Both statements in one sentence. Sentence is, at the end of the Chumash, the end of the Torah, it says, V'yomer Hashem l'Moshe, Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu, Hincha shochev im avosecha, you are going to lie with your forefathers, that means you'll be buried. Become ha'om hazev izona. This nation, this people, will rise up and commit sins after your passing. It's not a pleasant sentence. It doesn't sound pleasant. And yet, Rabbi Yeshua said, from this seemingly unpleasant sentence, I can prove both of those statements to be true. How? Because the Gemara in Yuma says, there is no comma placed in the Torah. We can pause at any place. So we can read this sentence to mean, Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu, Hincha shochev im avosecha, you are going to lie with your forefathers, be buried, v'kom, and you will rise. Be buried, and then you will rise up again. Here you have your proof of Tchiyas HaMeisim. Now, we take the comma the other way. You will lie with your forefathers, become ha'om hazev izona, and this people of yours will rise up and commit idol worship. Well, that proves that Hashem knows the future. Hashem foretold that the Jews will turn to idol worship. The Romans asked of Yeshua, you say this sentence proves that the dead will come back to life, become, perhaps the become is said as later on, that the people will commit sins. Yeshua said, for your sake, at least you must admit that you have half proven. No matter how you turn this word, you're going to prove one of the two things. If you read it as belonging to the first half of the sentence, it'll prove that there'll be Tchiyas HaMeisim. The second half will prove that Hashem knows the future. Now, why did he say half? Why didn't he say, you've proven at least one of the two? Why half of what you want? The Gemara says, Hashem Yechoy Zal says, half means that either half. It's the same as a person who is very learned, person known as a Gaon. A Gaon means a genius. He's called a Gaon because he is clear. He has clear knowledge of Shas. And Shas means the 60 Gemaras. The word Gaon is begimetria, numerically 60. So when a Gaon is asked, how much do you know of Shas? And he will answer half Shas. And they say, fine, which half shall we test you on? His answer will be, any half. I know half, but any half you want to test me, I'll take. Shemi Choizal says, this is what Shulba Chanya replied. Any half you want, because we have the right to place the comma, as long as there's no comma, it's up to the Chazal, the Chachamim, to learn the sentence in any manner they feel proper. That's the power of the rabbis of the Gemara. We find there are a number of laws in the Torah which are completely unclear. For example, a basic rule, basic mitzvah, that every Jew feels is so simple and so elementary, it must be written out clearly, and yet it does not appear in the Chumash. The mitzvah of fasting on Yom Kippur. Nowhere does it say a Jew must fast on Yom Kippur in the Chumash. The wording is, Ve'inisem es nafshi sechem. You shall cause yourselves to suffer. The Gemara says, cause yourself to suffer. A person can lie in the sun without protection on Yom Kippur and drink hot tea. He's suffering because of the sun. That should be enough. We must therefore accept the interpretation of the Chachamim, the Gemara, which translates that to mean fasting. Or the mitzvah of tefillin. Totafos bein einecha, the tefillin shall be between your eyes. According to the Chumash, this would imply, you place the tefillin on the bridge of your nose. The person does that, he does not get the mitzvah of tefillin at all. The Chazal tell us, they reveal to us, the exact spot of the tefillin must be above the hairline. So here too, it's the power of the Chachamim to interpret these words, interpret the sentence, which way the sentence moves, where the word belongs, and therefore we can accept either half as true. And so from here we have the proof that there will be Trias HaMesim from the word Vekom. Now, Agav, here we must add a word to Nerizal. I don't want to frighten you, but Nerizal says, well, let's say better than Zayin HaKodesh first, speaks about this, when we say the come, it does not mean that he will come back to life a certain period after Mashiach's arrival. The come means that Leshabena comes, rises in every single generation. That is, a portion of his soul lives in each generation. Each tzaddik, each day, each generation has a portion of Moshe Rabbeinu's soul throughout all generations. But then there will come a time that the Kom Ha'om Hazeh, that he will rise eventually together with the people, together with his own generation, the day that Midbar, that means they will rise simultaneously. And when will that be? That'll be at Trias HaMesim. And in that rising, it will not be just a tiny portion of his soul, but completely, his whole neshama, his whole body, completely. This will be the final arising of Moshe Rabbeinu, and the final tikkun. Here, Rizal says that since we know, we've discussed this many times, Moshe Rabbeinu, letter He, stands for Hevel. He was the Gilgal of Hevel. And therefore, the word Hevel, as we stated, we explained last time, the word He Beis Lamed. He stands for the Chamisha Chumshei Teda. And Beis Lamed, Beis is the first letter of the Teda. Lamed is the last letter of the Teda, to show that Hevel eventually would be Moshe Rabbeinu, who would teach the Teda to the Jews. But since Hevel's crime was one for which he paid in death through Cain, and the tikkun was done through Moshe Rabbeinu, but not completely. That will be completed only at the time of Tchiyas HaMeisim. What does Tchiyas HaMeisim mean? Not only that the dead will rise up, but there will no longer be death, which means that the pasuk, the sentence, will become fulfilled, Bila Hamoves Lanetzach. There will be death again. The first letters of that pasuk make up the word Hevel, which means the final tikkun for Hevel when Moshe Rabbeinu comes back together with the together with the Jews at the time of Tchiyas HaMeisim. Now the Gemara says further, there was a queen at one time, the Egyptian queen named Cleopatra, about whom the non-Jewish historians speak in a very different light than the Gemara does. And of course the Gemara, authored by Hashem, written by the rabbis, the Gemara, being the word of Hashem, is the absolute truth. So when there is any discrepancy, a difference between the Torah and the Havdil, the Tumah of history, we know what the truth is. The Gemara speaks very highly about Cleopatra, who was extremely interested in the knowledge of Torah and whose faith was implicit. She had long discussions with the rabbis of the Gemara, and especially with Rabbi Meir. The Gemara says that she asked Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir was the leading rabbi in his time. He was one of the two greatest students of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon Yochai were the two leading Talmidei Rabbi Akiva. She asked Rabbi Meir with the deepest respect. Her first statement was, I want you to know that you don't have to tell me, and I don't just believe, but I know. My belief is so firm. Person believing means that his belief or amunah of faith is something that a person cannot see. If you can see something, it is absolutely not faith. That is knowledge. Faith is something that you cannot see, you cannot prove, and yet you believe, you feel that it is true. But the peak, the purest faith is that kind of faith where a person believes as strongly as though he would actually see it. This Cleopatra said, I know, meaning that my faith is as strong as knowledge, that the dead will come back to life. There will be Tchiyas HaMeisim. This I do not question at all. But my question to you, Rabbi Meir, is, when the dead come back to life, will they come back clothed, with clothing on, or without? In other words, when Adam HaRishon was created, he was created without clothing. At that time, it was not immodest. There was nothing embarrassing. Later on, when he ate from the Eitz Hadas, the tree of wisdom, it was embarrassing to be seen without clothing. And subsequently, for all time later, there will be a beged, a malbush, because a malbush, a beged, stands for a very important spiritual item, malbush begimati and chashmal, which is a very heavily spiritual elevation, so that even after Moshiach comes, after Tchiyas HaMeisim, the people will still wear clothing. Now, when the dead will rise up from their graves, will they rise with clothing or without? This was a question. A mayor replied, when they rise out of their grave, they definitely will be clothed. And that's why when a person is buried, he is very particular about what he is buried in. Not wearing a full dress suit, tuxedo, but to be sure to be buried in something that is pure, white tachrichim, shrouds with a talus. A person is careful to have a talus on. The Gemara says that the rabbis are very particular about being buried purity, because when they come back to life, they don't want to be ashamed of what they are wearing. So, Meir replied, I know this, the fact that you take a grain of wheat, you plant in the ground, in order for this to grow, to give forth, plant that seed in order to give forth crops, wheat to grow, you find that the grain is planted bare, denuded of any covering whatsoever. When this grain of wheat comes out of the ground, when it grows, it has a full covering. It has a husk, it has a coat of leaves around it, and so too will the tzaddikim rise up out of the ground together with their covering, which is their clothing. Well, the Gemara says that Gamliel was also, he was the chief rabbi of the Jews. He was in the custom of, the habit of having discussions with the Roman king or the Roman emperor. Roman emperor had a daughter too. It seems very noteworthy that these daughters, these women like Cleopatra and daughters, were much more impressionable as far as faith is concerned. This was not only them, but this is at all times. It is fact, it is definite fact, that men may learn more Torah and more deeply than women. Men are privileged and women are not in that respect. But more important, when it comes to that which is supersedes knowledge, and that is faith, pure emunah, it is fact that women possess a much purer degree of emunah in Hashem and the Torah than men do. Ben Azal stated very emphatically, if you want to learn how to have emunah, you want to learn what is meant by real emunah, and see the emunah of a woman. Because a woman's emunah is a sincere, unquestioning one. And every person should strive for that really deep, pure degree of emunah. That's why we find here, this case, for example, where the emperor spoke to Gamliel, and he asked the question in the form of, in a derisive tone, sort of mocking tone. He said, you claim, note that he said, not I believe, but you claim, that the dead will come back to life. How can you claim the dead come back to life when the dead are earth? They turn to earth, they turn to dust. Now, in that case, how can dust turn into something alive? You know, there are four levels of creation. The lowest level is afar, dust or dirt, which is inanimate. The next higher level is someach, vegetation, which possesses, contains life, but is immobile, it cannot move. Third is chai, animal life, fish and birds, which live and move. And the highest is medaber, the human species. Now, the lowest, afar, has no trace of life whatsoever. How can dust turn into the highest of the levels of creation? We know that you could change an animal into a human simply by eating the meat of the animal. You eat it properly, saying, making sure that it's kosher, saying a bracha, that meat goes into a human's bloodstream and it's converted to become part of the human being. Or even sameach. But no person eats dirt. So that there's no time when dirt is converted to something human. How can you claim that this dust that a person turns to will eventually become life, human beings? Although we find that in the creation of Adam HaRishon, it says that Hashem created him from afar, but it's very important to note, it does not mean he created him from the dirt of this world, this earth. That means the afar kaviyachal of Gan Eden, the afar of paradise, which is something very spiritual, because Adam HaRishon at the time of his creation in no way resembled a man today. It was after the act with the Eitz HaDaas, he was expelled from Gan Eden, driven down to earth, and he took on this physical form. So there's no question from Adam HaRishon. The question now was, how can you claim that from afar, from dust, a person can be converted into, this dust can be converted to a human being? At that moment he was about to reply when the emperor's daughter said to Gamliel, please allow me to answer this question, because this takes not knowledge, but faith. My answer to this question would be, she said, speaking to her father, she said, we have two tradesmen in our city, two who manufacture items. They manufacture vessels, dishes. One of them manufactures dishes out of water, the other out of clay. Now, which would you say is more commendable? Which would be praised more as a higher degree of efficiency or capability? The king said, naturally, the one who creates vessels out of water, how can you make a plate out of water? And she said, but it is fact that the one making it out of water is much more difficult than out of clay. In that case, then, what kind of a question do you ask? If, since Hashem creates a person out of liquid, a tiny drop that every infant is conceived from, is born from, if that becomes a human being that's liquid, a tiny drop of it, then surely if Hashem is capable of doing that, he is surely capable of converting dirt or dust into a human. This was her reply. Rabbi Meliel said, bravo, you've done well. I couldn't have done better than that. However, the point of his question was that what he really meant to ask was he did not believe that this world was created originally from nothing. Now, it is known that the basis, the yesod, the foundation of our faith, foundation of Jewish faith, of Torah faith, is Chiddush HaOlam. The fact that this world is a new one. This is not an old, aged, decrepit world. The world itself is exactly 5,734 and a half, close to 5 years old, and no more. Prior to that, there was no existence of any world at all. Prior to that, it was only Hashem himself, which means that when we celebrate the birthday of the earth, it's the same as the birthday of the sun and the moon and the planets, the universe. In fact, the birthday of the heavens, the angels, and everything in it. Everything is as old as that date and no older. Those scientists, Rahman al-Islam, who believe this world is 10,000 years old, or a million, or a billion, or so on, that is complete atheism, complete kafira. Because the Yesod Emuna, the foundation of Emuna, is the Chiddush HaOlam. Now those who disbelieve, those skeptics, what is the reason for the disbelief? Because they believe that this world lasted just about forever in the past. They do not believe in creation by Hashem from nothing into something. It's known as Yesh Me'ayin. Everything came of itself, came of something else, just as they believe in reproduction only. They do not believe in spontaneous generation, something that Torah speaks about very much, very often, and stresses. So this king, this emperor said, since there cannot be any Yesh Me'ayin, since he believed there was no creation from nothing, therefore, how can there be this creation from just plain dust? And this was the answer of the emperor's daughter, who said, if Hashem created from nothing, water, of course, refers to the very beginning of creation. We do not find the actual creation of water in the Torah. That's included in the word Bereishis. There, in the word Bereishis itself, is where the water was created, meaning the very first item in creation. So since Hashem created the world from nothing, then surely he can create the world from dust. The next proof given to it was that, also a Kal Vachomer, if a glass breaks, then this glass can be repaired. Now, glass is created, or is manufactured through blowers. A person who blows with his breath creates this glass to whatever shape he wants. And if a glass that's broken can be recreated, then surely a person who was destroyed can be recreated by Hashem through the breath of Hashem, which is eternal. Because a person's breath has a limit. Whereas the V'ipach Apov Ruach Chayim, Hashem blew into a person the spirit of life, and so surely Hashem can recreate, can repair that which was broken or destroyed. These were the answers to the emperor. The next question, the next point, is a very deep point where we go back to this issue we just begun, the topic of reproduction or spontaneous generation. The Gemara speaks about this point. There's a very interesting Rambam on this item, which we'll discuss at the next Shia Mitzvah Shem.